KNOM Profiles.
Right now, Alaska Native villages across the Bering Strait region are living through a global pandemic without access to clean water and basic sanitation. As aging water systems, climate change, and federal and state bureaucracy threaten the public health of these communities, local residents struggle to find the funds for critical infrastructure. In part one of this two-part series investigating sanitation in Western Alaska, KNOM follows the money.
I have to look over this to get a hot water tap.
Some communities, like St. Michael, rely on crumbling infrastructure to meet their daily sanitation needs. Others depend on untrained water operators. Currently, the villages of Wales, Shishmaref, Diomede, Stebbins, and Teller are considered unserviced, meaning they lack access to residential water and sewer. In Wales, the fight for water and sewer spans generations. Frank Oxerock Jr. is mayor of the coastal community of less than 200. His father, Frank Sr., who also served in local politics, instilled in Frank the importance of sacrifice from a young age.
This is what my father and his brothers taught me ever since I was younger. Our elders used to say, you have to take care of your children and teach them. At the time, we never thought about it, but now I'm at this age, these things come back to me every time I think about the community.
Oxerock Jr. wants his grandkids to be able to turn on the faucet and wash their hands before sitting down for dinner. He wants his children to pour themselves a glass of water when they are thirsty. Although the community's school and clinic have running water, Oxerock Jr. says villagers must rely on natural sources for residential needs.
We use two different types of water. We use snow water for washing, and we use waters from the North and South Creek for drinking.
Over the years, the mayor has learned to choose his battles. Right now, he is focused on rebuilding Wales' 50-year-old washateria, which is run by the city for community use and has two working showers for approximately 200 people. Construction on a new facility is slated to begin in July, but the road to cutting the ribbon has been a winding one. Broken promises and poorly organized coalitions have hardened the mayor's optimism. Following in his father's footsteps, Oxerock Jr. has come to realize a certain financial reality.
Yeah, I think after she left all these different boards, I kind of stepped in his shoes. And the main thing I always come down to, what I hear more than anything else, is cost, money.
Money talks. Off the road system, where the cost of construction can balloon to Hindenburg size, money does most of the walking, too. Understanding where and when to apply for grants can be the difference between a working septic system and an unserviced community. However, for local governments and tribal entities throughout Western Alaska, the source of funding for large-scale water and sewer projects has long been a subject of confusion and controversy. Take Wales, where some residents wonder if federal grants are handed out alphabetically. As Frank's uncle was fond of saying,
I don't know why Wells is always down, way down at the barrel, so to speak, like my uncle would say, bottom of the barrel.
The major sources of funding for sanitation in the Bering Strait region are split between federal and state agencies. At the federal level, there's the IHS, the Indian Health Service, and the EPA, also the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They all have individually appropriated congressional funds to distribute to Western Alaska. Those three agencies, in turn, work with state and local entities, namely the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, the ANTHC. There's Village Safe Water, a subsidiary of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, and the Capital Improvement Program, KIPP, whose projects are selected by the governor. Essentially, there is a pot of money, and it has varying amounts of funding from year to year. Each year, communities in the Bering Strait region must navigate a labyrinth of bureaucratic tape in the hopes of ladling from that pot. Some communities get lost along the way. Let's start at the top. According to the Indian Healthcare Improvement Act, the IHS is tasked with improving community health and providing access to sanitation facilities for Alaska's native population. To this end, the IHS compiles an annual list of communities suffering from sanitation deficiencies, the Sanitation Deficiencies System Manual, or SDS, for short.
Each project that is within that system has a deficiency level. And the purpose of collecting all of that information is to be able to, one, report to Congress what those needs are.
David Beveridge is the Director of Operations for ANTHC's Department of Environmental Health and Engineering. He explains the difference between a Level 1 project and a Level 5.
Projects in Alaska will have projects that range from a DL1, which might be just routine replacements, repair maintenance projects within a community. Might be painting a water tank or replacing a valve, something like that. A DL5 project means a house is without water and sewer. So those are the highest level projects.
According to the most recent SDS cycle, the villages of Wales, Devens, Teller, Shishmaref, and Diomede are all categorized as level 5 deficient by the IHS. According to Beveridge, the SDS manual's priority system awards projects a total score out of 100.
So when the funding is received by the Indian Health Service, they go down that list of priority projects and they attempt to fund them in priority order.
Other factors include a best practice score adopted from the state of Alaska, which Beveridge says accounts for more than 15% of a project's total score. In theory, the communities that most need the funds are the first to get them. That's according to IHS materials. The SDS manual was devised to create a federal record of where those communities are. Nonetheless, Alaska Native villages have struggled in recent years to get projects funded, despite clear risks to public health. Why? Megan Elvanis Stimfel is the self-government's liaison for the Norton Sound Health Corporation, the NSHC. She noticed a number of projects in the region weren't receiving IHS funding.
Essentially what they did last year, what they said, we're only going to serve Native homes. And if there's other structures in a community that are not Native homes, you, tribe, have to find a match for those structures.
As stated in the Indian Healthcare Improvement Act, the responsibility of the Indian Health Service is to a community's Native population. However, by requiring matching funds for structures such as schools, teacher homes, tribal offices, and post offices, the IHS placed basic sanitary needs for whole communities out of financial reach. As Elvanis Stimfel explains, if a community can't find the money,
you don't get the whole fund. You don't get the whole grants.
In a congressional hearing this past December, Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski articulated her displeasure with how the federal agency had changed its model.
There have been interpretations more recently through the IHS that are perhaps more stringent as to how those rules apply to non-Indian community and requiring IHS to then pay the pro rata contribution for whole projects, which then make it absolutely impossible, infeasible to move forward.
For example, in 2018, Kotzebue was forced to find tens of thousands of dollars in matching funds for a Level 5 sanitation project. They came up short and missed the entire cycle. The Washateria project in Wales has struggled with ineligible costs as well. Speaking to KNOM last fall, Senator Murkowski was blunter with a reaction to IHS's policy on what constituted a Native community.
Yeah, I think it just boggles the mind to think that this is what we're dealing with, and it is a challenge. So this is yet one more challenge. We will get beyond this one too.
Missing out on a cycle means losing an entire year of planning and preparing. The same funds may not be available the next funding cycle, which could result in further setbacks. This is to say the new interpretations have cost communities their most precious resource. Time. On top of that, the SDS model presents other challenges. Remember the best practice score Director Beveridge mentioned earlier? The score is an amalgamation of technical, managerial, and financial factors. Beveridge is clear to note a project's BP will never preclude it from funding, but it can have a significant impact on where a community ends up overall. One example, Beveridge explains, is whether water and sewer operators pass the state certification test.
The operator certification system is not very favorable for rural Alaska. I think there's about a 7% pass rate on the tests right now across the state.
One potential reason for that low pass rate, access to certification training is extremely limited in the Bering Strait region. Rachel Lee, the Director of Environmental Health at NSHC, organizes training sessions for water operators every year. Lee told KNOM Radio last year there aren't enough operators in the region.
We get about 19,000 from Indian Health Service each year for the training program.
Total per year for the whole region, $19,000 for training.
Yeah.
Is that an adequate amount of funding?
No, absolutely not.
Now, it's important to note that IHS is not responsible for all water and sewer funding in Western Alaska. According to ANTHC, over half of the money comes from the EPA, the Rural Development Program, and matching funds from KIPP. There's just one catch. KIPP uses the same best practice core included in the SDS, and the EPA won't release any funds to a community without a certified water operator. Take the island village of Little Diomede, sitting miles west of the Seward Peninsula. The IHS initially appropriated the necessary funds for Diomede to have a new water treatment plant. However, Alvana Stimfel says,
there was an ineligible cost portion of $50,000 that ultimately I think Norton Sound paid to secure the funding, but the EPA said they wouldn't fund it because there's no certified operator in Diomede, so.
Between the IHS narrowing the definition of a native community, the SDS's reliance on the best practice score, and the EPA's regulatory restrictions, the pot of money available to Western Alaska has grown smaller. The region's response? Well, in the past, water and sewer advocates have traveled to D.C. to make their case, but last year, they decided to bring Washington north to Alaska. NSHC hosted IHS officials twice last summer, including a trip from Acting Director Rear Admiral Michael Wiaki in August. Wiaki toured sanitation facilities in Wales, St. Michael, and Shishmaref. He met with city and tribal officials and, as Alvana Stimfel told me, regional leadership were not afraid to speak their minds.
Talk to Alice Fitka, the president of St. Michael Tribe. She'll tell you she hosted these officials in her home.
A few months later, I finally got the chance.
My home. Welcome to my home. Gather our water, pack our water. We use these kinds for them in here. Every single day, we have to fill it. We use lots of water.
Fitka is the head of St. Michael's IRA. She runs tribal operations for the village of 400, but on a weekend in late February, we've stepped outside of her office and into her kitchen. CNN blares on the radio in the background. Forlorn Christmas ornaments hang in the eaves, possibly waiting out the thaw. Her daughter plays on the tiled floor. On the table in front of us sit three red jugs. They're for drinking water. Fitka, along with half of her community, has been without running water since the end of December. She wants to show me what she showed Wiaki.
I brought them. After the meeting, I brought about 3-4 of them to individuals' homes and showed them the sump that we have so much trouble with in our homes. Those tiny little tanks that we call them sumps. They're about this big. They're placed in the homes. And to me, that's very unsanitary to have that because waste is going through there.
When her water system is working, the sump acts as a basic filtration device. Water, oil, and general filth collects in the sump. The filth is then pumped outside of the house. In Fitka's experience, the little containers back up easily and cause a number of problems.
A lot of us are having that problem with that because when it fills up, it's too small. It can't keep up and start smelling. And it really smells like gas smell. It's not gas, but it's really... And it's coming from that sump that's in our house.
St. Michael's water and sewer system is almost 2 decades old, according to city grant writer Virginia Washington. Fitka wishes her community had more support from state and federal entities to upgrade their infrastructure.
It's hard to tell if they'll ever be able to meet our needs of wanting a good operational, good system. Because look at the kind of support we're getting right now. We're not getting 100% support of getting the system fixed for our village. Like I tell you, they come and band-aid, just do band-aid job. I'm sorry if I sound negative or upset and disappointed, but that's what we feel has been happening. Would they do that kind of band-aid job in a city? I don't think so.
Alice Fitka won't have running water until the end of spring. After his visit to St. Michael back in August, IHS Acting Director Wiaki and his staff spent the afternoon in the sunlit hallways of the hospital in Nome. The King Island drummers and dancers performed for the visitors. After they played, K&OM asked Wiaki what he had learned from seeing the unserviced communities firsthand.
So I can take these stories back east with me when I'm in a hearing with Senator Murkowski and her committee to tell them what I saw and what I heard directly. And that's how we get the money necessary within the IHS budget to address these challenges.
At his official confirmation hearing this past December, a time when temperatures in St. Michael hit 60 below, the Rear Admiral had the opportunity to make good on his word.
Good afternoon. I'll call the nomination hearing to order. Today, the committee will hear from Rear Admiral Michael D. Wiaki.
Addressing a panel of congressional leaders that included Senator Murkowski, Wiaki used his time to speak directly about the Bering Strait region.
We know that in personal visits that I've had the opportunity to make to Shishmaref and Wales, I've had the opportunity to see firsthand the limited facilities, the solid waste concerns. You definitely have my commitment to continue scanning the landscape for innovative solutions and to best use the Indian Health Service's resources to meet the needs throughout Indian country.
When I do, I appreciate the recognition.
When asked to respond to the Rear Admiral's remarks, Alice Fitka took the opportunity to extend an invitation to the federal government.
Come and see for yourself. Come to our village and see it for yourself. Then you'll understand what we're going through. You need to come to our community, meet with the right people, the water plant operators, etc., and go to the homes that have problems with our water and sewer system. Then you'll understand, and maybe you'll do something to make a change in helping us.
Mayor Frank Axorak Jr. of Wales believes Wiaki's in-person visit and his remarks show progress.
They saw in firsthand, you know, where we live and how we live.
Construction on a new Washiteri in Wales will begin in July, but Axorak won't be celebrating until the last brick is laid.
I'm still working with Village Safe Water and with the state, and they would send me paperwork and say, hey, Frank, you got to sign this task a couple times. They said, this is the final paperwork you'll be signing. Okay, I'm happy. That was, what, a month ago? 2 weeks ago, they sent me another one. So it's ongoing. I guess I'm starting to think I'll be the happiest man if once I see that we cut the ribbon for that facility.
A similar project in the unserviced community of Shishmaref is also scheduled for 2020, according to NSHC's STS database. Teller has applied for funding to rehabilitate its Washiteri during the upcoming cycle. At the earliest, construction would begin in 2021. After breezing through his Senate confirmation hearing on December 11th, Rear Admiral Michael Wiaki was said to be officially confirmed by Congress last month. That hearing has been indefinitely suspended due to another health crisis, the coronavirus pandemic. For K&OM Profiles, I'm JoJo Phillips.